Hello and welcome to another episode of Meta Sidekicks. My name is Liv and this is the podcast where we talk about all things metaphysical, spiritual, paranormal, and in between. Today I have a special, it's special because it's new. I thought about doing stuff for the video that just came out on YouTube not too long ago, but I was inspired by something else, specifically a metaphysical shower thought. Anywho, before we get into the podcast, let me introduce myself. My name's Liv. I'm a professional psychic medium and, a mom and a wife and a content creator. I do not identify and I don't necessarily want to be an influencer, so I'm just going to stick with content creator. But if you are embarking on your own metaphysical or spiritual journey or just looking to learn more things about cool metaphysical and spiritual topics, then this is the right place. You've found it. Good job. Excuse my voice if you are a longtime listener. I'm in the process of getting over a cold. My whole family has been, taken down by the cold that's been going around. But at least it's not actually physically so freezing cold anymore. Anywho, today we're going to be talking about the maiden, the mother, and the crone. This is like a triad goddess. Some people call it like a triunity goddess. And we're going to be learning a little bit about where this spiritual sort of concept came from, at least in the most recent years, which is like the 20th century neo-paganism, to be more specific. But I really want to talk about more of this spiritual concept as a form of reflection. So this podcast is inspired by a metaphysical shower thought, literally. I was in the shower a couple weeks ago and this thought popped into my head. If you're also new, because I've only been posting once a month for videos on YouTube and podcasts on wherever you listen to your podcasts, I'm 5 months pregnant into my second pregnancy. And, because of that, a lot of different things have been changing in my life and with myself. And I think that's kind of what spurred this podcast in and of itself, to be completely honest. I know my son is, he's going to be 3 soon. So he's 2.5 right now, but it's finally hit me that I'm a mom. I've been married for almost 4 years now and my maiden years are over. I am a mother. So has anyone else who's become a parent felt like the first few years are just one big bout of imposter syndrome almost? Like, I have saved some clothes from my pre-pregnancy years thinking that I'll fit back into them one day. And now finally, after my intrusive shower thought from just a few weeks ago, I finally realized that it's not necessarily that I've been thinking that I will fit into my clothes weight-wise again one day, but that I will fit into them as the person who wore them before me. Like Olivia the maiden, not Olivia the mother. And heck, I'm almost 30 years old. So as we head into the new year, the fire horse, I thought a little conversation about stepping into ourselves and our futures may be in order, as I have not really realized until now how stuck in the past with myself that I've truly been. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. A little bit of a small history on the maiden, the mother, and the crone, and then more focusing on like what that means to you as the listener, what that means to you on your own spiritual journey and your spiritual practice, etc. So more of like a introspective conversation, given a small synopsis of where this idea came from, what it represents, etc. Now, before we get into the rest of the podcast, I just wanted to talk about the Doss House video that's out on YouTube. I haven't done very many ghost investigations in a while, and this is more of like a formal one. It's part one. I'm sure there'll be another part coming out soon. I thought about doing a podcast on that today because, guys, when I was editing the video and I did the intro part, if you've already watched it on YouTube, then you know what I'm talking about. If not, I'll put a link in the show notes below so you can go check out the paranormal investigation at the Doss House below. But I didn't realize how, well, I don't want to sound like I'm tooting my own horn, but how close to what we actually experienced in the house during our paranormal investigation that I was when I gave the like pre-investigation, like this is what my metaphysical psychic feelers feel about things. And I left the Doss house that night after the investigation and recording and filming and everything like that, feeling like it was a good investigation, but it wasn't like mind-blowingly like awesome. Like there wasn't any like, I don't know, things that like stuck out to me. But I honestly think now, now that I was, you know, in post-production going through everything, I was like, oh my gosh, I talked about a little boy and then old people. And then literally the first session that we had was with a little boy and old people. And it's a solid EMF session. I feel like Russell and I did a podcast a couple months ago about like our review of paranormal equipment. And I think I put the EMF reader, like, I didn't talk very highly of it because it's like a very, I don't know, just like basic sort of paranormal investigation tool. If you guys don't know, because you're new and this is like the first podcast that you're listening to, an EMF reader just picks up electromagnetic frequencies, hence EMF. And it's not super exciting to use in the paranormal investigation community, if you will, but it's such a solid EMF session. So that kind of just like humbled me a little bit. And then the other parts of the investigations will have yet to be edited and things like that. And there'll be other portions on Nightmare Fuel Paranormal with Russell and his team. But it's just, I don't know. I was really excited about it. So if you guys want to see a really good EMF session and a little bit of a cool intro and things like that, please go check that out on the main YouTube channel. Again, I'll put a link in the description below. And then if you're on Patreon, I have another bathroom mediumship session that I'm working on for you guys. I know I did one at, oh, I don't even remember the hotel's name anymore, but in Louisiana with Amanda, we did a bathroom mediumship session, and I broke that into four little parts on Patreon. But there'll be another bathroom mediumship session from the Doss House coming to you guys on Patreon for anyone who's listening and is subscribed to that. But that's my little information about the Doss House. So let's move on to the actual podcast, the Maiden, the Mother, and the Crone. So let's talk about the spiritual idea of the Maiden, the Mother, and the Crone. If you're not a lady or this specific analogy doesn't jive with your own spiritual practice, insert whatever triad feels right to you. Through Metapsychics, I've learned that a lot of the followers that come here actually do believe in Christianity, Catholicism, etc., some sort of like Jesus religion, if you will. So if you want to insert the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, totally cool. The sun, the moon, and the stars, the bud, the blossom, and the branch, the tater, the spud, and the mushroom, whatever fits you and your spiritual practice and how you feel like you can represent yourself through these transitional periods of your life and growth, etc. So I'm a 90s baby, and the first impression of this spiritual idea, specifically the Maiden, the Mother, and the Crone, I think I honestly just gained from like pop culture, just existing within the 90s and 2000s itself, and like all of the media that you consume as a child. I never really made an effort to research the idea further until now. However, I do remember reading or overhearing about this triple goddess from other research that was done for Metapsychics. But what I remember is that this spiritual concept is much newer to us than we actually think. And like most other spiritual ideas, is based off older ideas or theologies. So when research was being done for Metapsychics, I remember the fact that the Maiden, the Mother, and the Crone was actually an integral part to the neo-pagan practice of Wicca. So here's what my research found. A little back history story on like where the idea of the Maiden, the Mother, and the Crone came from. So there's this dude, his name is Robert Graves, and he was a man who wrote a book called The White Goddess. The White Goddess was a female goddess sort of created by Robert Graves, if you will, that represented birth, life, and death, and who in essence was his reinterpretation of the Mother Goddess, who represents the three major phases of the moon, which originates from various ancient mythologies. So his book, The White Goddess, is a historical grammar of poetic myth, right? I had to look that up too. So I'll tell you what that is. So a historical grammar of poetic myth means that this book that he wrote, The White Goddess, is a book-length essay on the nature of poetic myth-making, primarily focusing on the White Goddess who Graves portrays as the goddess of true poetry. To quote the myth and poetry section of the Wikipedia article sourced in the show notes, quote, Graves, it says it, or Graves' book, draws from the mythology and poetry of Wales and Ireland especially, as well as that of most of Western Europe and the ancient Middle East, relying on arguments from etymology and the use of forensic techniques to uncover what he calls iconotropic redaction of original myths. Graves argues for the worship of a single goddess under many names, an idea that became known as the, quote, matriarchal religion and feminist theology in the 1970s, unquote. So this idea of the white goddess, this true poetry essence, if you will, or essence of poetry as a goddess, was created by Graves from his own research of other mythologies. And then he's like, I'm going to use this historical information and my own sort of poetic sleuthing, if you will, to argue that this goddess actually existed because this, 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 and this says it. And then these people changed it and now reworded it as this. So it actually does exist. And here I'm going to tell you about it. So building on that, the feminist theology of the 1970s, along with the broader feminist movement itself, influenced the development of modern Wicca. So do you see how the three are tied? No pun intended. The idea of the maiden, the mother, and the crone being tied to Robert Graves' book and the subsequent establishment of Wicca. So I just, you know, bringing it back to the fact that when research was being done for other metapsychics content, I remember this idea being brought up and I was like, I didn't know necessarily what it was, but when I heard that it was like a Wiccan idea, I was like, oh, interesting. But I actually didn't even know that Wicca was such an young belief, if you will. It's only been around since the 20th century. Anyways.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/new.
Medications require eligibility and prescription. Patients on 15 milligrams of tirzepatide had an average of 21% weight loss in a 72-week clinical trial when paired with diet and exercise. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
Do your knees make you feel older than you are? You're out here trying to have a hot girl summer at 35. You're on dating apps. You're saying yes to spontaneous trips. Maybe you're rediscovering your flexibility. And your knees are like, actually, we'd like to quit. The IncrediWear Infrared Knee Sleeve uses fabric tech designed to increase blood flow and help reduce pain and speed recovery. So your knees can actually keep up with your life. It's like giving your body the support it already wants while it heals, just without all the extra pain and drama. Wear it to the gym. Wear it on a date. Wear it while you're doing things I cannot say on this podcast. It's comfortable, breathable, and works 24/7. Go to freesocks.com and grab the IncrediWear knee sleeve and a free pair of socks with purchase. That's freesox.com. Because if something's going to give out, let it be him, not your knees.
Carrying on, I just wanted to mention like two little things that I thought were interesting while I was reading this first Wikipedia article on the book itself, The White Goddess. So... Graves talks about how the White Goddess is like the embodiment of poetry. I guess she has a son too, and through like specific like ritual ceremonies, you can communicate with them, petition with them, etc. Don't quote me on that. That was just something that I read from like one sentence. So again, that kind of plays into the idea of, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong in the comments, that Wicca is more of a like ritualistic sort of magic practice anyways, but that might be why, since his book so heavily influenced its establishment. But he's all about poetry, right? So I really liked this thing that he said. So I'm just going to quote the history section of the same Wikipedia source, which will be the first source in the show notes. It says, quote, Graves believed that one could be in the true presence of the White Goddess when reading a poem. However, in his view, this could only be achieved by a true poet of the wild and not a classical poet or even a romantic poet of whom he spoke critically, saying, quote, and this is what made me giggle, the typical poet of the 19th century was physically degenerate or ailing, addicted to drugs and melancholia, critically unbalanced, and a true poet only in his fatalistic regard for the goddess as the mistress who commanded his destiny. He's like, so only this, like, I get like the picture of like a what is it, like a manly man, like think lumberjack dude in the middle of the woods with like an axe slung over his hip, and he's like, I am the true poet. And then he just like yodels into the distance some poetry, and the goddess like smiles upon him. I read that and it made me crack up. I was like, I've never thought of, you know, a true poet only in his fatalistic regard for the goddess as the mistress who commanded his destiny. he's like, not those skinny dudes in the corner that are just crying. That's not cool. They can't walk with the white goddess. Oh my goodness, that's so funny to me. Anyways, the last thing was one more quote that is more, not necessarily just funny. It has to do with like things that are moving on. So to quote the poetry and myth section of the Wikipedia article sourced again, it says, quote, Graves derived some of his ideas from poetic inspiration and a process of analeptic thought, which is a term he used for throwing one's mind back in time and receiving impressions. So I just wanted to talk about this idea. Excuse me, I'm struggling. All of my lungs are pushed up. I'm sorry if I'm heavily breathing, I apologize, and like just so stuffy. But anyways, I wanted to talk about this idea of analeptic thought, which is a term that Graves specifically used for throwing one's mind back in time and receiving impressions. So this guy got a lot of criticism from other like historians, theologists, poets too, because they said that there was no like real concrete evidence, even though he used like deducing things to try and argue his point. They're like, his point is so like right at the ends that we can't really use it. And you can appreciate his book for its poetry, I guess, its romanticism, but it's not as historically accurate as he argues it to be. So some people were very critical of his book and didn't really view it very well in the academic world when it comes to like anthropology and historians and theologists. But other people really thought it was cool. So I just, as a psychic medium, this idea of analeptic thought made me think about like when people tell me stories and I feel like I get psychic information as to more details of what they're telling me. So for example, if you were to like make a reading with me, a lot of times people will ask me if certain spiritual situations that they've been through or experiences have actually happened. And honestly, that is such a hard question for me to answer because it's not always for me to say. I'm not here to give you validation of your spiritual experiences. If you ask me, I will try, but this is how I do it. So someone will ask me a question like, did X and Y Z happen? And they usually don't give me like the full breakdown. They'll give me as much or as little information about their interaction or event or experience as they want. And then as they tell me this, I'll ask spirit, like, tell me things that I wouldn't know about this experience that I can use to say, did this happen? And if the person asking me the question says yes, then I use that as a basis of, okay, it has to be true or it did happen because spirit is telling me from a more omnipresent psychic perspective, things that I wouldn't know about the scenario to fill in blanks. And that's just what I thought about, like when they said about analeptic thought. So although academically people criticized him for his book, The White Goddess, and his idea of like this goddess existed and she's the goddess of poetry, yada, 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 because this, and this is so close to this and that and all of the mythologies he probably looked at and went through historically. But I'm thinking when he was doing that, maybe he was really using analeptic thought or more of like a psychic perception, if you will, to view information that, you know, as a psychic, not everything's true. If someone tells me things or I ask them a question about their experience and they're like, no, that's not right. And I'll get to like 3, 4, 5 things and they'll just say, no, it's not right. I'm like, either I am not able to see what it is that you experienced or the experience that you had was not paranormal. It is just normal. So I just, you know, Robert Graves didn't have someone to either confirm or deny whatever it was that he was researching. But I do think that perhaps he may have been using his psychic abilities in order to fine-tune his idea and perception of the white goddess themselves. Not to say that they don't exist, but perhaps they do. Just he got some things right and some things wrong, because that's just how, you know, psychic things and spirituality exist. But yeah, analeptic thought. I think that's really cool. So like I said, he did receive criticism for his works from anthropologists, historians, and the like. And, you know, some people thought it was really cool, and then other people were more critical, which is just how the cookie crumbles, right? So to stay more modern, I want to stay focused on more of the neo-paganistic form of the triple goddess or deity archetype, and not necessarily like the long, long ones that it kind of came from. But we will do a little bit of an overview of the theology and mythology that created the foundation for Graves to get his idea, and then for his idea to be expanded upon more. So, to quote a section of the second Wikipedia article sourced, quote, in common neo-pagan usage, the triple goddess is viewed as a trinity of three distinct aspects or figures united in one being. These three figures are often described as the maiden, the mother, and the crone, each of which symbolize both a separate stage in the female life cycle and a phase of the moon, and often rules one of the realms of heaven, earth, and the underworld. So if you're not new to the idea of spirituality and your own spiritual practices, you might already be thinking about the Hellenistic and other triple goddesses that you already kind of have worked with or simply know just because you know them. So here are a few. Hecate, associated with the aspects of Diana and Persephone, the Graces, the Three Fates or Morai, the Seasons, known as the Horae, and also the Tridevi, which is not Hellenistic but Hinduism, just to name a few. If you'd like to read more about these goddesses in this context, please look at the second source in the show notes or comment which goddess trinity you'd like me to cover in a future podcast or video. But to move on, following the Wikipedia quote, I mean, this quote from Wikipedia sums it up pretty well. The synchronism of the predominant triple moon goddess, a united figure of Diana, Hecate, and Selene, combined with the Orphic belief that the seasons and the fates were divisions of the same divinity, along with the latter representing the three stages of life, ultimately gave rise to the modern conception of a triple goddess whose symbol is the moon and whose triplicity can be conceived of both in terms of the moon's phases as the maiden, the mother, and the crone, unquote. However, it was not until the early 20th century that this fairly obscure ancient connection was developed and popularized. Moving into the neo-paganistic and Wiccan symbolism of the maiden and the mother and the crone. So, you know, Robert Graves wrote his book in like, what, 1940-something, I believe? Did I write it down? Oh, don't quote me. I think it was like 1928 or 1948. I'm so sorry, I don't remember. You can look it up in the first Wikipedia article. But it was before the 1950s. I know that for sure. Because Jung even talks about it. And Jung was like the 1920s, 30s, 40s. And that goes into ideas. Like he has ideas about triple goddesses and Jungian psychology. So if you're all about that, this kind of melds into that in its own different way. But yeah, let's move on to neo-paganistic and Wiccan symbolism of the maiden and the mother and the crone, which was popularized in the 20th century, more so because of this book's publishing, as well as matriarchal religion and feminist theology, which was really pushed in the 1970s, or like introduced is what I should say. Which is probably why most of us know what the maiden, the mother, and the crone is in the first place, because we're all born post-feminist movement. All right, so the triple goddess is a symbol of the waxing, full, and waning moon, representing the aspects of the maiden, the mother, and the crone, and can be arguably attributed to the different stages of life a woman goes through. Side note for the guys that are still listening, I know I told you at the beginning of this that you can like put it whatever you want in, like the sun, the moon, the stars, the spud, the tater, the mushroom, anything like that. But for all of the guys listening, the male aspect of this triple goddess is referred to as, quote, the horned god. So for the guys listening or more curious dudes and dudettes out there, let me know if you'd like me to cover the horned god as a topic in the future. You can let me know in the comments below if you're listening on the Metapsychics Extras YouTube channel or on, like, I think Spotify now and Apple Podcasts has, like, reviews. But if you do a review, you, like, rate the podcast and then do a comment, put the comment in there. I'll try to read it. But anyways, the horned god. I just think that's kind of funny. So let's talk about what the maiden, the mother, and the crone represent, like, more symbolically for this, like, neo-paganistic / Wiccan concept, if you will. So the maiden represents enchantment, inception, expansion, the promise of new beginnings, birth, youth, and youthful enthusiasm, represented by the waxing moon. The mother represents ripeness, fertility, sexuality, fulfillment, stability, power, and life, represented by the full moon. And the crone represents wisdom, repose, death, and endings, represented by the waning moon. Fun fact, I'm a moon girly. My big three are Leo, Aries, and Sagittarius. So I like to call myself a big three trash fire. And I know it may seem funny, but I think it's actually how I balance my energy out. So I don't necessarily know a lot about like moon magic and things like that. I want to. At some point in time, I will dive into that, hopefully, if not on a personal level, also on more of a level for metapsychics to share that all with you. But I'm not like a pina coladas and getting caught in the rain or like sunset walks on the beach. I want to be outside when the moon is out, specifically when the moon is full. Oh my goodness, that is my favorite. Just sitting outside with the crickets in the summertime or just like when it's warm enough. Even in the wintertime, I wrote about this in a life update on Patreon. I do bi-weekly life updates on Patreon for like all of the tiers. And I made a realization that I think, you know how like in the wintertime, there's less daylight and it just seems cloudy all the time. I honestly think that the best moons though, and like moon energy is when it's winter. It always seems like during the day it's cloudy, but then at night, oh my goodness, the moon is so bright. The sky is so clear. You can see all the stars. And even though there aren't like the birds and the crickets and the squirrels and stuff, it is just magical. And I eat that up. I just love it so much. So I think that's how I balance out all of my fire signs. Honestly, I did the full like zodiac birth chart or whatever. I have zero water in my chart. It is like 75% fire and then a little bit of air and earth. So I need the moon. Just let me have it. Anyways, my interpretation of each, that's what I wanted to talk about. So this is more so where we're going to move out of the factual, like historical sort of learning aspect of where the idea of the maiden and the mother and the crone came from. And we're going to move back to like, what does that mean for you? I'm going to tell you what it means for me. I'm going to start by telling you how I sort of interpret the symbolism of the maiden, the mother, and the crone personally. At any point in time, please pause the podcast. Tell me what your interpretations of the symbolism or feelings of those are, or if you made different ones, not the maiden, the mother, and the crone. Let me know in the comments below, because when it comes to spirituality, my belief is that everyone's practice is different, and there's not necessarily rigid rules that you have to abide by. It really is just an expression of yourself and your own spiritual essence and however you find that to move yourself forward. But anyways, let me tell you what I think of these things, and then we're going to move into some more like thinking about it, applying it to your life, introspective retrospection, if you will. So I think that the maiden, what comes to mind, honestly, and I'm sorry if people get mad at me, hear me out, is ignorance. Ignorance, though, in the pursuit of knowledge. For those who practice tarot, think page vibes, hope, wishfulness, the compass from Pirates of the Caribbean that only points to what you truly want, but only if you know what that is. Otherwise, it just looks like a broken piece of shiny junk. I think of watercolors when I think of the maiden. If you're not careful, the colors will run together, either in a beautiful or messy way. But nevertheless, it takes finesse to create, and the maiden represents the creation of yourself. Figuring out how to fine-tune all of those like things about yourself and meld them into one sort of cohesive vibe, if you will. And that's going to be different for everybody. But those are the sort of, I don't know, comparisons that come to mind when I think of the maiden. Let me know what you think though in the comments below. Moving on to the mother. I did a quick Google search asking, what is a word to describe the control one gains after realizing compromise, gentleness, and finesse are what give control? And this is just what my Google search to that question included. And I didn't like the first two answers. I was hoping that it was going to be like a really cool word like Wunderlust, you know, like those really cool words that mean things. But Google, being Google, said sway and influence are the best words to describe that. But again, I didn't like that those words. So this is more of like the Google breakdown instead, which I thought was more important. So when it comes to sway or influence, it said these terms imply the ability to direct outcomes, manage situations, or persuade others without relying on force or coercion. Again, this is my interpretation of like the mother. So the best words and phrases to describe this type of control, the single words are sway, influence, diplomacy, which emphasizes managing delicate situations or people with skill, finesse, and tact. Mastery was another one that said this highlights the skill-based high-level competence that makes forcing a situation unnecessary. But what I really liked that Google gave as a way to describe what I asked, which was describe in a word how someone gains control after realizing compromise, gentleness, and finesse are what give that control. So the concepts, gentle control, which is something I've never thought of or heard of before, honestly. So the first one was called soft power. This is a concept from sociology or internal relations that describes influencing behaviors or interests through persuasion and attraction rather than coercion, which is called hard power. The other concept was gentle control, which is a strategic, skillful approach to focusing on safety and, for example, animal or people management. It says strategic restraint. There's stewardship, which implies controlling something by taking care of it, guiding it, and managing it responsibly rather than dominating it. And then there was words describing the process. There's finesse, which is using skill, delicacy, and diplomacy to handle a situation, which by definition avoids brute force. Discretion, which is exercising judgment to behave in a way that avoids causing conflict. Temperance, which is moderation, self-restraint, and calmness in action, which allows for better management of emotions and situations. Or, again, if you're a tarot person, think about temperance as in like the temperance card to represent the mother in this triunity, if you will. So I really think that the mother aspect of this triunity is the opposite of what many of us view as a more masculine aspect of attaining power and control. Instead of learning to dominate things in your mother era, if you will, when you leave your maiden era and you enter your mother era, you learn to work with the flow of life. First within yourself as the maiden, learning to control those things within you to define you, and then outwardly with others as the mother. And I just, you know, things I'm thinking about. So as the maiden, you have created yourself, but as the mother, you learn how to create outside of yourself and not just for yourself. And what I really liked, like, I liked when it talked about soft power and gentle control and stewardship, things like that. It made me think about horses. And if you guys don't know, I actually have been around horses for a large portion of my life. My mom has been around horses a lot. And when my grandmother died, my mom's mom, she was a very... very different from my mom. My grandmother was born in like right after the Roaring Twenties, and she was a school teacher. She was a speech pathologist, but her best friend, who's still alive today, she said June was very different from the rest of the teachers, because when we had lunch and we were in the teacher's lounge, everyone else was eating like bologna sandwiches and like peanut butter and banana sandwiches, right? But June, my grandmother, she was bringing out like escargot. And like dark coffee and things like that, like brie and bread. So when my mother got into horses, my grandmother never really understood it. So when my grandmother was diagnosed with cancer, she had my mom promise her to always have horses or ride until she died, because it wasn't until she was older that she really realized how much my mom enjoyed it. And even though she didn't necessarily understand it, she could accept and see how much it made her daughter happy. So it wasn't until I was about 12 years old, 11, 12 years old, that my mom went through her midlife crisis. And instead of having another sibling, my mom was fortunate enough to have a horse. So since then, horses have been a very large part of my life, I would say, or at least a more regular part of my life too. So it's not something that I'm unused to. But my mom, when she was learning horsemanship when she was younger, and like the 70s, 80s, the way she learned horsemanship was very different. And one of the things that she changed when she finally was able to own her own horse and was teaching me horsemanship was something called natural horsemanship. And the natural horsemanship that she decided to learn was because the horse that she got had never been in a stall. She was quite almost feral. And she was only 4 years old. And the brute force of horsemanship that she had learned was not working with her horse, Kate. And she's like, I don't know what to do with this horse because dominating it is not working. And my mom at this point didn't know the difference between domination, horsemanship, natural horsemanship, you know, the psychology of animal behavior, etc. But she embarked on a journey to learn that so that she could bond with her horse. And what she found was natural horsemanship. And the natural horsemanship that she was able to teach me and I was able to learn from other people too is a way of soft power and gentle control and stewardship and finesse and discretion. And it all stems from the fact that human brains are predatory, whereas horses' brains are prey. So anyways, it's just when I was in a lot of situations with horses, when you're riding a horse, it is the only sport that you do as a team sport, but your partner is not another person. So when it comes to trying to understand and form a relationship with this 1,000-pound creature, brute force and coercion and hard power does not work all the time, and it can get you killed or seriously injured. And I've watched a lot of people just from the sidelines work with horses in that way. And I'm not villainizing them. They just, that's how they were taught. And that's what they think is right. And that's okay. But I've seen how soft or gentle power, gentle control can work in such different and magical ways. And I really feel like that idea of walking into your mother era is like that. Instead of trying to fight against the man in certain ways, sometimes that is necessary. And sometimes in horsemanship, that is also necessary. You need a little bit of hard power to create boundaries, etc. Protect your peace, protect your horse. However, I would say the majority of things, 75, if not 85% of things, I think can come from soft power and gentle control, finesse. And that really is what I think the mother era is realizing. Or again, if you don't know anything about like horses, watercolors, everybody's worked with watercolors. Even if you were a little kid in elementary school, I remember hating doing watercolors because all of the colors would run together. And I'm like, everything that I drew just turns into like brown tinges at the end. And it just like, you try to draw something, but then it expands more and it touches more things and you don't realize it. And then you get gross colors and then it just ends up looking like some weird abstract blob and it's not clean or cut or precise. But then you look at people that actually know how to watercolor. They understand the gentle control and the finesse that it takes, and they make beautiful, beautiful artwork. But it takes time and it takes patience and it takes perspective and sitting back and looking at things and analyzing them and being thoughtful to gain those things. And it's such a hard thing to do, especially when you're learning. And if you're a giant triple fire sign like me, you just want to like dive for a head right, like head first into everything, you know, just cannonball into life. And sometimes that doesn't work. And that's been really hard for me now that I'm starting to like enter my mother era, if you will. So yeah, whichever analogy works for you. That's kind of what I think the mother era is. It's learning how to create outside of yourself. Now, let's talk about the crone. The crone, and I do want to preface this. I haven't reached this stage yet, and I'm not going to, hopefully, for a while. I do hope that I get to the crone stage and I get to live long enough through it to tell someone about it, maybe, if I care enough to tell people about it at that point. But at this point in time, in my ignorant stance as someone who is sort of transforming out of the maiden or stepping more fully into her mother phase with just a little bit of maiden things, you know, at the tail, I think the crone really represents love and light. And I think a lot of people are going to get upset about this. If you want I wrote a Patreon post, life update. It's specifically life update number 50. I was on social media and I had a whole bunch of people, like, it was coming on my feed where people are like, love and light is the devil, which I used to think it was. And that's what this Patreon post talks about. But I'll just hear me out, okay? Hear me out. I think the crone is the final form, if you will. And since I haven't gotten there yet, I think I'm a bit too ignorant to give you a good, solid opinion. However, I think the crone is a bit of a return to self. So you have the maiden figuring out who you are, creating yourself, focusing on yourself. Then you have the mother. Now that you've created yourself, you can create for others. But now when you're in the crone, you return to yourself a little bit. Similar to the maiden, but not so selfish and close to the mother, but not quite so outwardly giving in creativity. It's having gone through the journey and returned home. Advice in self is not freely given to others in such an almost unsolicited way, kind of like what happens when you're in your mother era. You're outwardly creating for others. But instead, it's only sought out by others. It is time to give back to yourself in your crone era, now that you've not only grown roots, but blossomed many times to bear fruits to others and allow others to come and sit in the cool shade of your wisdom and give back to you, if necessary, while you enjoy the new world as it moves and changes around you. Basically, the crone symbolizes that you've been through the storm and grown nevertheless. You've chosen to use the darkness around you to help you more steadily reach for the light, not cripple or cause you to girdle your growth. You've seen the terrible things the world can shelter, but not allowed to make it bitter or shelter it yourself. Anywho, if anyone is listening and feels like they've reached their crone era, please let me know in the comments below what you think it really represents or embodies, because I would love to have that wisdom. I'm asking you. Now, lastly, please understand, I do not think that the maiden, the mother, and the crone is a simple three-step process. You just simply spiritually graduate from one phase to the next. I do think two or more things can be true at once. However, the basis of the podcast today is just some introspection, some personal thoughtfulness to reflect on where you think you may have been or where you may be at in your life. And, you know, personally, I feel like I've been keeping myself in my maiden era. Not that that is a bad thing. I simply feel that I've been keeping myself from moving forward creatively, clinging to the young woman who was still trying to figure out her path or direction to take in life. Life, over the past few years, has helped me to narrow down my choices. Not that other options aren't available, but more so to say these things were helped to be put in your path by the universe. And don't waste your time or resources trying to do something else. This was made for you to build upon, these things that the universe has put in my path, with your creative potential. Like, specifically, these things were given to you because you have the stuff to make them better, to grow them. One of my favorite sayings is, if you give a woman a house, she'll make it a home. If you give her ingredients, she'll make you a meal, and so on and so forth. As women, I think we are the essence or physical embodiment of creation itself, an extension of that divinity. But as humans, I've also heard the following saying recently that's kind of stuck with me. And as a content creator and someone that I feel like I'm on social media too much sometimes, the quote is something along the lines of, humans were made to create, not simply to consume. And that, like, that's been sitting with me a little bit. I feel like that can really be thought about in some interesting ways, especially when it comes to the maiden, the mother, and the crone, at least the way that I was interpreting them. So anyways, I think the spiritual idea of the triple goddess of the maiden, the mother, and the crone are unique to the feminine journey, but can be applied to more spiritual and thought-provoking narratives. But outside of moon phases and symbolism to life, birth, death, heavens, and the underworld, etc., the concept of creation and creating things within and outside of yourself as an extension or reflection of you is something I think about as well. Not just figuring out your place within the world, but also how your place within the world can create more places for others, ending with your ability to live out the rest of your years rooted in your own dominion. So I just want to say thank you for everyone who listened today. There are going to be, I know I talked about this in other podcasts before, that there's going to be more collaborations to come. And there is. I do have a very special one in the works. However, the holiday season coupled with cold and flu season has caused delays. But I promise more collaborations are coming. I even want to see if patrons might want to come on the podcast. I think that would be fun because I've finally figured out how to do like Zoom recordings of audio things and video stuff on my computer through my audio board. So that makes it gives me the confidence to feel like I can do things and not just be like, hey, you want to do these and then have absolutely no idea what I'm doing, you know? And again, private readings, I'm still offering. They are booked out on a monthly basis because with being pregnant and being a mom now, if someone gets sick or I have to change, I don't want to have to change people that are booked 6 months out who have already been waiting like 6 months or more for a reading. Doing a month by month basis, I think is better. And if you want, there's gift certificates too. So you can purchase your reading now. And then as soon as opening comes up, you just pluggy doodle your gift certificate code in. You've already paid for it. Now you have the time that you want. I mean, you don't have to worry about worrying about it, I guess. And exclusive services are back. These are for Patreon tiers Akasha Castle and higher. So it's $15 a month or more. With Akasha Castle, you already get monthly live stream readings with me, but you also get access to the exclusive services, which are wing readings. And I finally gotten to do one for a lovely patron named Kelly. And I think it turned out much better than I thought it was going to be. And she really enjoyed it. So that's what I thought was interesting. That comes with an email explanation of your artistic drawing, I guess, of my psychic interpretation of your energy, which is just a different way to sort of view auras and energy associated to your person. My husband was actually more critical of my drawing, which I understand. I'm hoping that with the more that I do, the more like professional and fine-tuned artistically they become. But what he really liked was what I wrote. And I thought that was very kind. So I hope you're happy with your drawing like Kelly was, but if you're not as wowed by drawings and more so by words like my husband, you might like the email explanation of your wings. Anyways, that also, the other services are aura readings and private Zoom past life readings. So those are on Patreon for Akasha Castle and higher tiers. And then we also have Mediumship Book Club now. I know Mediumship Circle was advertised as a part of Patreon for a while, but that's the Cloud Plane and higher, I believe, which is $25 a month. But I've really, like, over the last year or two, I've talked about how I don't feel that I'm necessarily this teacher. I'm like in my Pagely Sage sort of era. And I think instead of me trying to just like talk at you guys and teach you things in like a, again, not such of a strong, what is it called? Hard power way, but more of a soft power way of let's learn together. So now we're doing Mediumship Book Club every month. So that's meeting with me in Zoom with other patrons. And we are talking about things that we're learning in books about mediumship and psychic abilities, et cetera, et cetera. Perhaps The Moon Goddess might be a book that we read in the future. But nevertheless, it's a place to learn that is not necessarily, this is exactly what you think. It's a collaborative sort of format, a community, if you will. And then again, Patreon for even just the psychic, which is $3 a month, you get bi-weekly life updates from me. and Discord access server, so you can talk to other people about spiritual things that you're going through. You can talk about your ideas of the maiden, the mother, and the crone too, if you want. Anything like that. So far, everyone on Patreon is just a peach. They're very, very nice. Everyone gets along, and you guys are silly. I like to pop on there and share things about cooking more recently because I've really been trying to get into baking. But I know I'm only posting twice a month now, so if you want more content and you're able to, Patreon is a good place for you to start. I think I have 67 or 68 life updates. There's a whole bunch of exclusive listener stories that are only listed on Patreon for you to read too. Depending on what tier you go into, there's exclusive bonus videos too. So if you're looking for more content, Patreon is the place to go if you're able to help support me in a different way. Other than that, I sincerely appreciate every single one of you listening today and continuing to watch on YouTube, listen to the podcast, and I will be back with you guys next month with a new video. Maybe the video will be on this, maybe the video will be on something different, but so many more people watch videos and listens to podcasts. And I'm the opposite. I love podcasts versus videos. So I think that's why it's important to make content on both platforms for the same sort of topics. But anyways, I digress. I hope you all thought about your maiden, mother, and crone journeys, and I'm looking forward to reading any comments that you provide, whether that be on your podcast streaming platform or in the comments below on the Metapsychics Extras YouTube channel. But I'm excited to listen to what you guys have to say. But thank you so much for listening this Sunday, and until next time, peace. I just thought of something that I think is pretty funny too. If you listen to my whole Love and Light dissertation or read it on Patreon, which is life update number 50, I feel like a better way to concise or like condense down like what this, like the spiritual equivalent of when someone says love and light to you should be the same thing as like the Southern equivalents of when you say bless your heart to someone. Anyways, peace out.